If it's true that the kingdom of heaven is at hand, why is it that it feels like we're always going through hell when we're on the earth plane?
My favorite quote on humility is, being humble is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less.
If you think something is missing in your life, it's probably more of the real you. It's almost like you realize that being authentic is more impressive than trying to be impressive.
Hello and welcome to Live Your Love. I am Alicia Doss, your host, and I'm beyond delighted to welcome one of my favorite guests ever back for the third time. And I mentioned that I have 486 questions for him, so hopefully there'll be a part two again. Dr. Robert Holden, such a warm welcome.
Alicia, thank you very much. I love that we're doing this again, so thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's always a joy, such a joy. We are going to be discussing Robert's deeply profound and beautiful book, and also it's very, very entertaining reading. It's easy to read, called Becoming Yourself, which is, when does it launch?
It launches 10th of March. So yeah, super exciting.
Wonderful. It's a gorgeous book. You're going to really learn a lot about yourself, my beloved listeners and viewers, and even more learn about us as one in spirit. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Robert, then of course we'll call in the light. So Robert Holden's work on psychology and spirituality has been featured on Oprah, Good Morning America, a PBS special, Shift Happens, and in two major BBC TV documentaries. He's an accredited professional member of the International Enneagram Association and delivered the opening keynote at two IEA conferences. He also teaches a leadership and Enneagram program for clients, including Dove's Real Beauty campaign. Such an incredible campaign, just really transformed the way women, how we view ourselves, just so beautiful. Unilever, IBM, and Google, and is a New York Times bestselling author of 15 books, including Happiness Now, Shift Happens, Authentic Success, Lovability, Life Loves You with Louise Hay, Higher Purpose, and the exquisite poetry collection, Finding Love Everywhere. So, you know, it's just shocking that you're a 3 on the Enneagram, Robert, with that CV. Oh my goodness.
Who would have guessed?
It's shocking, but I want to tell you, listeners, that Robert is such a grace-filled, relaxed, peaceful presence, and somehow in his sleep he accomplishes everything and, you know, lassos the moon for us all. So I am beyond delighted to have you. Robert is a dear friend for decades now. So this is a profound, profound teacher. We will start with the calling in the light, which thankfully Robert's going to join us on. So my beloveds, if you're driving, don't close your eyes, but just know you're with us. And if you're not, if you can safely close your eyes, just close your eyelids, opening your spiritual eyes. Ah, and that's really just done by intention. And we just now open into the light. So just take a deep breath and just let go of anything less than light. Breathe in love, the love of all the universe, into your beingness. Deep breath out and let go of any negativity, stress. Just let it all go. Landing right in this present moment, where we are here together in the name of love. And we just ask that anything less than love, any stress or negativity that might be affecting us or our planet, just be taken and transmuted, that we might come into that awareness that all is well. As we open into the light of the Holy Spirit, the light of the Christ, just lifting up as one. Just be aware, beloveds, that we're all together. So just feel that hand in your hand as we hold hands, creating a chain of love across our planet. And upon our hands are placed the hands of the angels, of the Lord, of love itself. Take one more deep breath, breathe in all that love and light. And as you exhale, your breath is tinged with light. And that love just amplifies as we open to receive Robert's prayer.
So let's dedicate our time together to our highest good and also to the greater good of everyone. Let's give thanks for this time together. And in particular, let's give thanks for that inspiration, the grace, the love that really is always at hand, guiding us through our life, supporting us in our ups and downs and the twists and the turns. And those moments when we maybe feel lost and lonely, and just to know that truly there is this greater presence, that there are angels, that there is love supporting us, is a really great thing. And let's really look forward to this time together. Thank you.
Thank you, and amen, and blessed be. And as much as I'd love to just sit in that spaciousness, we'll just ask that it infuse our conversation. And Robert, for those who are not as familiar with the Enneagram, I'm still in that. And that's, isn't that so beautiful to pray together and just be in
Yeah, it is. Honestly, yeah. And you, honestly, I just want to emphasize how beautifully you give yourself to that. And it was so, honestly, I love it when you pray and I love it when you meditate. I love it when, honestly, Alicia, it's a proper gift you give us all. Thank you so much. You're
Thank
really
you.
beautiful.
Really appreciate that. And I really receive that.
Yeah.
And I think perhaps my favorite quote biblically is, "Where two or more are gathered, there I am in the midst of them."
That's it.
So I love, so Becoming Yourself is absolutely my favorite book on the Enneagram. It's one of my favorite books, period. It is, so for those of you who are not familiar with the Enneagram, I would love for you, Robert, to just explain it a little bit and so that we really get the simplicity and the profundity of it.
That's lovely. Yeah, it does take a little bit of explaining. I mean, not least just the word itself. I mean,
Yes.
Enneagram, you know, when you hear Enneagram, I mean, it's not even too sure how to pronounce it in the early days. You know, I think I had to look it up. But Enneagram is a Greek word, compound word. Ennea means nine. Gram, it means model. So this is a model of nine. And well, nine what? Well, when you look at the Enneagram as a symbol, it's a circle with 9 points on it. And there are some lines in the middle. It's a little bit of detail. But essentially, those lines are to do with sacred mathematics, really, and sacred geometry. We're essentially looking at a mandala. And the 9 points on the Enneagram, if we start there, because this is an old system, this is over 2,000 years old. The 9 points on the Enneagram really represent nine meditation seats. And those meditation seats are an opportunity for us to get to know our true self, but also to get to know the mind of God, the heart of creation, and truth as it is. So that's the essential invitation. For example, at point one on the Enneagram, the meditation is on holy perfection. And holy perfection is where we tune into the idea that everything in creation is beautifully made, including ourselves. God doesn't make junk. We are well made. We are beautifully made. And our work is essentially to trust the perfection, the wholeness that we already are, and live from that place. And that's a meditation at point one. And there are nine of these meditations, all of them designed to help us know ourselves better and know the nature of reality much better. It just so happens as well that those nine meditation seats are also the home base for nine meditation type, excuse me, nine personality types. And those personality types naturally will have a life outlook, a way of seeing the world that is sort of biased towards their meditation seat. So, for example, at point one, where the meditation is about holy perfection, point one is the home base for type ones. Type ones are sometimes called the reformer or the perfectionist. And the perfectionist is the one that is looking for perfection. In looking for perfection, sometimes they try too hard to be perfect. And in trying too hard to be perfect, they forget that they are perfectly made. So, a mistake we might make at type one is that we endeavor to improve ourselves, and we essentially take up a self-improvement campaign that basically lasts forever, is never ending. And our self-improvement becomes a block to our self-acceptance, and our self-acceptance starts with this really the realization that we are all of us perfectly made. So the journey, therefore, the journey of growth would be for all of us to see what it would be like to be us if we were judging ourselves less and seeing ourselves through the eyes of love. So that just gives you a flavor of one point on the Enneagram and one type on the Enneagram. That type might not be you, it might be, but then again, it might be your mum, it might be your dad, it might be your parent, it might be a sibling, it may be one of your children, it may be the person you work for, it may be the artist that you most appreciate and respect, and on it goes. So you get a chance with the Enneagram to basically meet nine members of the human family, including yourself along the way.
That is so beautifully expressed. And I have to ask, 2,000 years ago, where did it come from?
Yeah, we don't know. It's a paperless trail, oral tradition. But look, what we do know essentially is maybe we could talk about the desert fathers and the desert mothers for a moment, because they very much took some time out from the world to ask some questions like, if God loves us, and that is what we're being taught, if God loves us, why is it that we don't always feel very lovable? What's getting in the way of that? Similarly, if we have been promised that God has sent a comforter, that God has sent Holy Spirit, that there is always guidance available to us, why is it we often feel so lost? And one more big question: if it's true that the kingdom of heaven is at hand, why is it that it feels like we're always going through hell when we're on the earth plane? So these were the big questions. Like, we've been taught that God loves us, that there's a comforter, and that we're living in heaven, but none of us feel it. So what's going on? The Desert Fathers, essentially, in particular, Evagrius Ponticus, came up with eight thoughts, which were known as the eight mistakes, which were then known as the eight sins. The eight sins became the seven sins, and we all know what those sins are. We're familiar with them. They became From spiritual ideas, they turned into religious doctrine. So we have to do some work around this. But fundamentally, the sins were simply mistakes we make. Mistakes we make, such as the sin of pride, for example, trying to do life all by ourselves without asking for heaven's help along the way, as an example. So we have a metaphysics, a spirituality that the Enneagram was expressing in the form of a diagram. And I think it's fair to say that it represents a universal teaching, which blends ancient spirituality with very beautifully with modern psychology. So it gives us essentially this path of growth. Along the way, what we do know is that the Enneagram has certainly been influenced by Egyptian culture, Greek culture, but also the Sufis, the Kabbalists. There's definitely we see some interesting material coming out of 10th century, 11th century Spain to do with the Enneagram. And eventually it was the enigmatic philosopher Gurdjieff who brought the Enneagram over to the West at the turn of the 1900s, essentially, and especially with the help of somebody called Mr. Uspensky. Mr. Uspensky was like the Indiana Jones of the spiritual movement. He would run out into the West, into the East rather, to Egypt and Syria and Russia, looking for the ancient wisdom schools. And he found Gurdjieff, and Gurdjieff introduced him to the Enneagram. So it's precise and vague all at once. The really good news is the Enneagram isn't copyrighted. The Enneagram isn't owned by a church. It belongs to all of us, and the invitation is essentially always know thyself, very Greek, know thyself, and become thyself. The Enneagram is showing us we're all on a path of growth.
That's so beautifully said. And so because it's beautiful, I think it's I'm introducing through you a lot of listeners to the Enneagram, and it's becoming more ubiquitous, but it's still a bit, in the mystical shores. And so you explain that so beautifully as a big, because a lot of my listeners are very spiritually oriented, as a big carrot. I wanted to share what you share about the true self. So, of course, it's very much about knowing yourself, knowing how you express in the world. I have to say, as I was reading, of course, I did your Enneagram workshop good 15, 16 something years ago at USM. And so I'm familiar with it. But reading this book, I really understood so much more about my type. There's going to be a big reveal. Y'all got to stay with us because we don't have time to talk about all nine types, but we're going to talk about Robert's type, which I already let the cat out of the bag, but you don't necessarily know what that means, and my type. But when I was reading about my type, there was a lot of wincing. And there, because it's just like, oh, yeah, I do that and that. And oh my God, that's why I do that. And then there was also a lot of self-acceptance, and then this freedom of letting go into no type. And so I want to, you share a bit about your true self. You write that the aim of the Enneagram is not to change your type, it is to grow and become even more of your true self, and that your type isn't who you are, it's the pattern of who you've taken yourself to be. And then you share, to jump later in the book, you share about how this recognition of working with the Enneagram becomes a doorway back to what Thomas Merton might call your original face, your original self. So that's the big carrot. Walk us through how really knowing your type actually frees you into that original face.
Well, if we go back to those desert fathers and desert mothers, you know, when they were looking at everybody and going, well, let's just observe each other for a while. Let's see why is it we forget that we're lovable, that we don't listen to the guidance, and we feel like we're not in heaven. Let's see what's going on. And so, for instance, they might look at one of the monks who might look a bit like me, and he sits at type three on the Enneagram. Come on, we'll just say it. I'm a type three. We've got it.
We've got it.
So they're looking at that monk and they're going, God, blimey, why is he miserable? Well, he's trying so hard when he's meditating. He is trying so hard with his meditation, and he's so disciplined, and he's working very hard. And he's really trying to earn God's love. And in a way, and he's trying to be the best monk in the monastery. And therein lies the trouble, is that actually at three, we're trying our best to be valuable. We're trying our best to be the best version of ourselves, to put our best foot forward. to be, you know, to do our meditation really, really well. But all of that trying, strangely enough, whilst it's well-intentioned, is the thing that's blocking the experience of love, that's blocking the guidance, and that's blocking the sense of really being in heaven right now. So that gives you a little example of how this works. So therefore, as a type three, which is called the achiever, that's my inner work, if you like. My inner work is to see what it is I most value, what I most cherish, but also to notice where actually I might be getting in the way of that. Yeah, so that would be some inner work for me to do as a three on the Enneagram. If we just go to your to honor your original question, the Enneagram is not defining you. I think it'd be really good to say this. Yes, there are nine types on the Enneagram, but the type does not define you. The type is just trying to point out your life outlook and your approach to life. So, you know, I am achievement orientated. From an early age, I thought to myself, what am I meant to be doing with my life? Yeah, what can I be doing? My whole flavor was about doing, 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 and doing. So that's my orientation, is to work with doing, and the sense that I have some work to do here in the world. What is that work about? Initially, I might think it's to do with a job and a career and other things. Eventually, along the way, I begin to see it is about that. But actually, the great work is also becoming myself. And opening up to love, opening up to guidance, and participating in creating heaven on earth. That becomes the work. So the Enneagram is not defining you. It can't define you because the soul is untypable. The soul is too mysterious to be defined. You are untypable. That said, the type is pointing to your life outlook. And it is also to your orientation towards life. And the great work with the Enneagram is to just to honor your type, but also to have it be a little bit more that you don't wear your type too tightly. It doesn't run you. It becomes an option rather than a habit. And I think that's essentially a nice way to begin to look at it. So you could say, and I said in Becoming Yourself, that your type really refers to your ego's operating system, the way you look at the world, your life outlook, and your approach to life.
Beautiful, beautifully said. And so what I'm hearing you say is, as you really learn more about yourself and what drives you and what motivates you, you can recognize that. Something, a dictum is simple awareness is often curative. And so it's like, as we have that enhanced self-knowledge, it sort of clears the fog away so we can see down the road and recognize that spiritual figure on the side of the road and recognize that we and see that view clearly. It's like it's wiping the fog away so we can see clearly who we are, which is beyond all types.
Yeah, so I was speaking to someone recently who, you know, she was so downhearted. She's the three on the Enneagram. She just come out of a relationship and she was just feeling so down and so sad because she has worked so hard to find a partner. And when she is in a relationship, she tries so hard to be the best partner she can be. And, you know, she was sort of at her wit's end because things are so, you know, so difficult. And with the help of the Enneagram, what we were looking at was, well, what if from now on we were just to try less hard? What if from now on, the next time you go out on a date, it's not an audition anymore? What if it's just a chance to get to know somebody? And what if, you know, because, you know, if the first date goes well, that's wonderful, except if you have tried very hard. And then it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Because you think to yourself, oh my God, well, it only went well because I tried so hard. So now I've got to try harder on the second date, you know? And after a while, you're caught in this terrible trap, you know, where you now think the only reason you're going out on a date with this person or the next date or the date after that is because you've tried so hard. So you daren't relax. And it all just adds up to a terrible situation in the end, which most of us can relate to, by the way. You don't have to be a type three to know this. It's
No.
just that it's the sort of thing that as threes, we'll be able to say to you, yeah, that's how it goes when I try too hard. Yeah.
I
So,
cannot relate to that at all.
no, that's right. You don't have to be a three, do you?
I am a, here's a big reveal. I'm a type two, which is, I want to thank you, Robert. So I have a question about the two, because I think a lot of us on a spiritual path may be, of course we can be anything, but I want to thank you because of this meeting. I finally got my youngest son to take the test. And surprising, he's actually, it's a bit surprising he's a type two, but it's also not surprising because his personality at first blush would not seem that, but his heart is.
Right. Yeah.
And so type two, I have to read another. This book is so beautifully written. I want to just share a few direct quotes from it. So, where is it? Oh, in your book, you reference so beautifully Henry Nouwen. Am I saying his name right?
Yes,
Nouwen.
the philosopher, yeah.
Yeah. So type two is the helper, the caregiver, the server, the one who does at their not best face. It's that they do a lot of what you call othering, referencing themselves through others, living for others, needing to be validated by others, etc. So just to give us an example of how you take, you already gave a beautiful example for type one and type three. So for type two, in your book, you reference that Henry Nouwen wrote, "The spiritual life starts when you dare to claim the first love. Love one another because I have loved you first." John 4:19. And that humility, this is a direct quote from the book, "Humility is accepting you are loved by God as you are before you try to make yourself lovable. Because what's lovable is your essence, not your image or your role." That is just so beautifully said. And I do have a question in there, but I want to share a really quick story about Robert that is in my book, and I sent it out as an email on the holidays for those who overgive on the holidays. And I had so many people replying, "Oh my God, thank you for seeing me." And I'm like, "Well, that was actually Robert who saw you, or the Enneagram who saw you." So I took Robert's Enneagram workshop, and I was on stage sharing with him, and I'm like, I'm overgiving. Like, I love that I'm, teaching the classes, and I have kids, and I'm supporting my husband to support John Roger, and I'm exhausted, and you looked up through the tears, and there was this beautiful golden angel, life-size angel behind you. Physically there, a statue, and you said, "Alicia, what if we don't want your help?" You said it in a much better accent than that. And I just went, "Oh, that's humbling. Also really free. What if we don't want your help?" And so for type twos, where we also, type threes do not have a patent on trying too hard.
Nope.
In fact, the last two emails to me, that is exactly what you said to me. I'm like, what is he talking about? And so help us out with type twos. How do we keep the beautiful wanting to serve, but also relax a little?
Yeah. So done a lovely job of just introducing the type two, as you say, sometimes called the giver, sometimes called the helper, most commonly the helper, but also the carer, the caring soul. So this tells us already that the orientation of this person is somebody who wants to give. They want to make a contribution to the world. And what could be finer than that, to want to do that? And in a sense, that is going to be the great work, is to, in a way, is to work out what your contribution is, and how to be that in the world. And I think it's what we need to acknowledge is that the Enneagram recognizes that when we incarnate, we all of us experience a sense of separation, a sense of separateness from spirit. There's a moment where when we come down from spirit into matter, and it might be half a second, but we lose our conscious connection with spirit. Now, that sense of loss, which is the separation, which most philosophies, theologians, and psychologists will tell you is our first trauma, our primary wound. Once we experience that sense of loss and deficiency and aloneness, that's when we start to work really, really hard to win back or to get back that sense of connection, that sense of oneness. Twos in particular are absolutely wanting to experience connection. Connection with the divine, connection with their true self, and connection with everybody else. How should we go about experiencing that connection? Well, one way is to offer help. It's to care for somebody. It's to love them. It's to give to them. And that is absolutely one way to feel connection. It's a beautiful, beautiful way of doing it. Where it becomes a little bit of a challenge, you might say, is when that desire to help and to give becomes a role that we play. So now, instead of just offering help, I become the helper. I become mummy's little helper. I become mummy's angel. I begin to realize, wow, I get a lot of love when I'm low maintenance and when I'm just helpful to everybody. That now becomes my role. That's now my habit. That becomes how I show up in the world. And before long, I'm now really almost trapped inside that role. And because I'm trapped in the role of giver, I'm wondering about, is it okay to receive? When I'm trapped in the role of carer, I'm also thinking, oh, is it all right if someone cares for me? When I'm trapped in the role of giving, I just wonder, is it all right if any of that comes back to me? It's best that I keep giving it to everyone else. Hence, why at some point, if we don't balance out, the giver will tend to become the martyr. Because the mathematics is unsustainable. You know, it's got to be a reciprocal flow. So the Enneagram is saying, it's so affirmative, it's so loving. The Enneagram is saying, you are absolutely right at two to think about your contribution to the world. But let's go back to that lovely, lovely line that you shared with us. Well, our work is to love one another, and then remember the next bit, for God loved us first. And that's the bit we have to remember, that even before we love each other, let's remember we are loved by God. We're connected with God. We're loved by God. And indeed, the mystics, the early Christian mystics, called God the giver. So God's the giver. So we're going to let go of the role right now. God is the giver. God is the helper. God is the carer. And now we're the instrument who receives all of that. And now, because I've received it, I can give it. If you do it that way around, that's healthy.
That is so beautifully said. So I have lots of witnesses, retire from being the giver. Yes. Yes.
Take the role off. That's right.
Exactly.
And we can all do this. You know, the role might be the strong one, the responsible one, the independent one. You know, it's the example. You know, these roles, I mean, the intention behind them is beautiful, but my goodness, when they become the role, the good person, I mean, my goodness, what's more exhausting than having to be good all day long, 7 days a week, even weekends?
Yes.
You know, a joy becomes a burden. Similarly, giving and helping, our greatest joy. But if it becomes the role, if it becomes the habit, and it's 24/7, it's now a burden. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's also keeping us completely separate from God. It's also taking the glory from God, going, well, I'm doing it. You know, I've got to exhaust myself rather than going, God is doing
so
it
true.
Through me, through my
that's
essence.
It. Yeah, that's it. The Enneagram, honestly, it's not trying to change you. It's not trying to fix you. The Enneagram is saying you are beautifully made. So, you know, and we're on the right track. The work is eventually, having cultivated a healthy ego, is to make sure that the ego becomes the servant to the soul. So we move from being ego directed to soul centered. That's a journey. You
Yes.
don't do that, you don't do that overnight. You don't do that, in your 20s. You do that through your 20s, through your 30s, through your 40s. It's a ripening that's happening. I love also that, for me, the Enneagram isn't judging the ego. The ego, you are meant to cultivate a healthy functioning ego. You're just not meant to become egotistical. And for me, that's the difference. Yeah. And egotistical means you've just got caught up in your image of yourself and you're not growing into your soulful nature. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, so beautifully said. And you know, my favorite quote on humility, and humility is a one of the positive attributes of a two. It can go
Yes.
pride or
Yeah.
humility. My favorite quote on humility is, being humble is not thinking less of yourself, but is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less.
It is it's humility is the virtue at point two. Every type has a virtue. The virtue of humility is it's to recognize that your own needs are a way to connect with God.
Yes.
It's like we begin by trying to have no needs at all, so we can only help, so we can help everybody else. But humility is an awareness that, well, I'm a human too. I have lots of needs. And the more honest I am about those needs, the more I can genuinely connect with God, rather than saying, dear God, don't worry about me, just use me as an instrument for everyone else. If we include ourselves in the prayers, this is humility. Ultimately, humility, I mean, it has many layers to it, but another layer of it is just to get that we were wrong about the idea that we were ever disconnected from God.
Yes.
It's just accepting the mistake and saying, yeah, it felt like that. But in truth, we are always loved by God. We're always connected to God. And if we could be humble enough to really just accept that and not resist it, that's an amazing act of humility.
Yes, so beautifully said. And because it's so fun to read your words, I'm going to read a few more of your words. So this is also type two, but very much the thing that I loved is it's like a it was it's such a spider web. It's like as you tug on type two, then all the types feel it all across the web. And so you write about type two. Holy freedom teaches that your nature and the nature of creation are the same. It frees you from the thought of separateness and from the fear that you must take care of your needs all by yourself. The holy will of creation wants you to look after you. Knowing this is great freedom, it helps you to give and receive more freely and to experience unconditional love. As Hafiz the poet says, it helps you to let God pour a universe of love into your heart and also to carry your heart through this world like a life-giving sun. I
Yeah,
just would love to
absolutely.
hear what that inspires. It's not a question. It's what does that awaken within you to share?
So at point two, I would say that it really is a meditation for all of us on receptivity, on learning to really receive the divine. And that allowing the universe to pour a universe of love through you. I mean, just get a feeling for that for a moment. And imagine if that was you were participating in that. You are participating in a universe of love flowing through you. And before as an instrument, let that love flow out of you, make sure it really did flow into you. Make sure it blessed you along the way. Because you mustn't leave yourself out of the great spiritual work. Love knows no exceptions. But this feeling of receptivity, I think receiving is a spiritual path.
Yes.
I mean, we talk so much about giving as a spiritual path, but actually receiving is a spiritual path. And And we often have to do a bit of work around that because the bias has been towards giving. So we think of receiving as being selfish, but do your research. Just look at anybody who's a really good receiver, and you will see that it is their great joy to share what they've received. Truly, just look around. No, you can do your homework. You can see people who are really, really good at receiving. Just they can't help themselves. They have to share. Yeah. The people who find it hard to share are the ones who haven't received in the first place. Whereas the ones who are receiving always just can't help themselves. They just have to share it with everybody. So we do our homework. We get through some of the indoctrinations, the biases that come along. But I would say it too, the great gift for all of us, you don't have to be a type two here, just at point two, really helpful for twos, but really helpful for all of us. Is to really, really get that receiving is a spiritual path. Asking ourselves a question like, how could I be a better receiver today? Setting that intention and truly recognizing that as I receive more, I can actually give from a more unconditional place without tiring myself out or exhausting myself. That's exciting. Yeah. And that's the work of two.
So beautifully said. I receive. We receive as twos.
Great.
So, going to your
Yes.
type three, the achiever, how is it, Robert? I wanted to say something really quick as far as receiving. So, John Roger was a really good receiver and a tremendous giver. And whenever most of us would ask him, and myself included, what can I do for you? He would almost always say, take care of yourself. Almost always. And at some point with me, he switched to do your work. But that is what I needed to hear because I was insecure about my work. Do you know? I was a woman in a rather, male-centric organization, and I was doing this kind of out there spiritual work. And so I needed that encouragement. But there was always such an emphasis with him on take care of yourself first so you can help take care of others, which to me speaks to what you're sharing.
Beautiful.
So the three, the achiever, how is it, how do beautiful threes navigate that? You asked for a briefcase on your sixth birthday. Was it six or five? Six?
Thanks. Yeah, that's right. My mom and dad asked me what I wanted for my birthday. On the eve of my sixth birthday, and I said to them I wanted a briefcase, and they asked me why, and I said it's because I think I really have got some important work to do, and I needed a briefcase if I was gonna, do some good work.
That's reasonable. That's really reasonable. So, how do you take that gorgeous achieving and focus and relax with it? And just talk to us a little bit.
I think the thing is, again, why I find the Enneagram is so compassionate is the Enneagram is observing us and observing the ripening effect of going through our life. So the fact is, early on, if you have a bias towards achieving or a bias towards giving, you'll be all out there. You'll go for it. And as a two, you'll probably try and help as many people as possible. And as a three, you're going to try and do as much as possible. And the doing at three is really what we're looking for is a feeling of feeling valuable. If I do something good for you, that makes me valuable. That makes me lovable. If I achieve something, if I win a medal, if I can hold a trophy aloft, if I can be useful to you in some way, I will be in good favor with you. And all of that is true to an extent, but again, if we believe it too much, then the trap becomes that I've always got to do a lot in order to be loved. I've probably always got to be successful, must never fail, I must always put my best foot forward. And what happens often for all of the nine types is that we get to a point where, let's say at three, we've achieved a lot, but we're still feeling empty. And we're wondering, is that it? Is this it? There must be more. And then there's this sense, well, there must be something missing. And one of the central themes of the whole book of Becoming Yourself is if you think something is missing in your life, it's probably more of the real you.
Beautiful.
So as a three, when I think something's missing, even though I've been very successful in inverted commas and I've done a lot and I've achieved a lot, maybe what's missing here is that it's time for me to see what it's like to be me when I'm not achieving a lot. To see what it's like to be me when I move from doing to being. Now, the great concern is it that if I stop doing, I'll feel even less valuable. But what if actually, paradoxically, if you were to let go of doing so much, trying so hard, auditioning for the part, being impressive, putting on a good performance, what if you were to relax into your true nature? And what if you were to discover that actually who you are is already valuable? Yeah, already lovable. And you don't have to try as hard as you thought you did. Now, that might be the new way to move in the world and to be in your relationships is to start to try less hard. So, this is sort of reminding me a little bit of Carl Jung's wonderful work where he talks about how the way we are in the morning of our life we must make changes for the afternoon and the evening of our life. In the morning of our life, we may run around trying very hard to do all sorts of things as a three, but in the afternoon and the evening of our life, it's now time to slow down a bit, pause, and really be more reflective, more wise, and more considered about what we're doing, how we're doing it. But most importantly, seeing if we can maybe come from a sense of a value that's already there in us rather than trying to make ourselves valuable the whole time. So when we're trying to make ourselves valuable, the problem is we never feel valuable enough. And when our agent drops us and we don't get the new deal or a new kid appears on the block or we now seem to be second best in the situation, we can collapse. That would be where we'd have an ego collapse. The new way is to be aware of more of our intrinsic value. The journey here is sometimes the Sufis call it engoldenment. Instead of looking for gold in the world, you become aware of your inner gold. And becoming aware of your inner gold, you now shine in a new way. But it's almost like you realize that being authentic is more impressive than trying to be impressive.
Very beautifully said. Yes, gorgeous. So, can you walk us through either a story or an experience? You share such profound, well, I don't know how to say it, but metanoias in the book, where it's like you have this, it takes it from beautiful words into a beautiful experience. Can you walk us through or tell us a story about how to take all this gorgeous wisdom into an experience of ourself in that holy, what was it, that first face in that, I don't think I'm enumerating what I'm saying very well, but it's just there's an experience here, and I sense that you can give us that or impart that or be an instrument of that. Would you do that for us?
Let's think. Well, I can give you a very current thing that happened to me literally last week,
Okay.
that I hope could speak to this a little bit. So 10 speakers gathered for to deliver TED Talks for an event here in London. It was a TEDx event. There were 10 speakers, I was to be the last speaker of the evening. So we all met up as speakers and we were in the green room talking a little bit. And I became really aware I was really nervous. I mean, like, so nervous. The nerves were really, really strong. Now, normally as a three, the sort of the ego defense would be to be very, very cool. And to not let on to anybody that I'm feeling nervous. Yeah, that would be the work. Okay, put forward your best self, Don't let anybody know that you're feeling nervous. That would be it. Fake it till you make it. All of the stuff we've always been told. Now, I do a quick prayer. Dear God, you may be aware that I'm feeling really nervous. What should I do about this? And it was again, my work at three is be authentic, tell the truth. And in particular, what I got was connect with everyone. Connect with everyone. So I started to connect with everyone. And people were saying things like, how are you feeling? So I told them, well, do you know what? I'm feeling really nervous. And they said, but wait a minute, you're a pro. You've already done two TED Talks. And it was like, yeah. And I'm feeling really, really nervous. So that became, I just told people that. And then it was like, oh my God, I'm so glad you said that because I'm feeling so nervous too. So now I'm beginning to realize that one reason why I'm feeling nervous is because we're empathic beings and I'm nervous, but we're all nervous, but we're all trying to act cool. So I'm telling the truth. We start telling the truth. Everybody starts talking about how nervous they are. And now a conversation opens up between the speakers where we're really going to support each other in a more authentic way. And there became this lovely sense of connection and a real sense of wishing each other well, rather than the posturing of, hey, I've got it down, we're cool, this is going to be great, and everything like that. Now, there was one particular moment where some of the speakers left, and there were just three speakers left in the room. And one of the speakers, Abby, she told the story of having just come back from Namibia, where she had been walking in the desert with nomads, and they had given her an essential oil made of myrrh from the very specific region where she is visiting. And she's just said, I'd love to give you a little bit of this oil, Robert, just before you give your talk this evening. Would you like it? And I said, yes, I would. That's very lovely of you. She said, it's myrrh, but the intention behind the oil is remember who you are. Now, when she said that to me, all I'll tell you is that landed in my heart and in my mind and in my body in this way where I went out and gave my TED talk from the place of remember who you are. And I just want to say, none of that would have happened if I'd done my normal type three thing, which was to act cool, posture as if I was fine, pretend there were no nerves, and given a performance, as opposed to a talk from my heart that I was able to give because I had now had the support of 10 speakers and one speaker in particular who had blessed me and anointed me with an oil whose intention was remember who you are. That's like an example, of what can happen for all of us when we just become a, when we have absolute compassion for our ego, but at the same time, we're not run by it. And we really do know that actually, when our ego relaxes and we let more of our authentic self through, it's going to work well for us, and it's going to work well for all nine types, and it's going to work well for everybody.
Wow, I am very glad that I asked that long rambling question because that completely landed the Enneagram for me, which, oh, I haven't re I think I'm going to be getting it for a while. I think we all will because it's so profound, but that was absolutely beautiful. I can just so sense that. Remember who you are. So gorgeous. Well, I cannot believe how fast the time has gone. It is already time to move into meditation, but first, I'd just love to hear, are there any final thoughts that you'd like to share?
Well, the one thing I would love to point everyone to is my Enneagram quiz that's published by Hay House. It's a free quiz. I'm very proud of the quiz because most Enneagram tests take around about 30 minutes to do. The Enneagram quiz, which has a unique design to it, takes 3 to 5 minutes to do.
Wow.
It's been beta tested to 10,000 people. It has a very, very healthy accuracy. And I think it's just a lovely way to get started with the Enneagram. If you want to get involved in the Enneagram, you've got to start somewhere, and some sort of a quiz to know your type is a good thing. So maybe if we could make sure there's a link we can give to everyone on that, that would be a great thing.
Absolutely, that will be in the show notes. And
I'm
also, it's
so
very
pleased
easy to
about that.
search. It's such a beautiful quiz. That is what got my son to finally find his type, was that exact quiz. I sent it to him. So if you just search Robert Holden Enneagram quiz,
Yeah,
you
I
will
think
come
I
up
should do
with
it. Hay House as well is good to put in Hay House just in case. But yeah, it's one of the barriers to entry with the Enneagram is how do I start? But then also, oh, this quiz seems to take so long. So, or this test rather tends to take so long. I call this a quiz because it's not set up in as a psychologist might set something up. It's really good. It really, really is. It works well and it's a great place to start. So just wanted to share that as well. And the fact that you can do this in 3 to 5 minutes is great. I would also say do it with a friend, okay? Because sometimes with self-awareness models, one of the things we find difficult is we're not always so self-aware, and we sometimes need a friend to help us along the way. But also it's more fun with a friend. So to do it with somebody or get a family member involved like you have, Alicia. That's how I did it earlier on as well. Just get involved in a conversation and it becomes a lot more interesting.
Beautiful. I love that. And then before we move into meditation, massive plug for Becoming Yourself, which is on pre-order now.
Yes, thank you. We also have a Becoming Yourself retreat in Phoenix
Ah, when?
on the spring equinox. That'll be my first 3 day event, solo 3 day event in the US in 7 years. So I'm super excited about that. That's called Becoming Yourself. That'll be 3 days on the Enneagram. We go through all 9 points, all nine types. But it's very much set on the spring equinox. So this is all about new beginnings, new possibilities, new chapters, stepping into a new future.
Beautiful. And that'll be in the show notes as well. Just tell us the date so people know.
That's spring equinox. So I think we're doing 20th of March, 21st and 22nd in Phoenix.
Beautiful. And the book is on pre-order. It's very, just go to Amazon or Robert, it's robertholden.com.
Yeah, actually, do you know a really good way to do this right now is again, Hay House are putting together. If you pre-order the book through Hay House or through my newsletter, which is an extension essentially of the Hay House work, you will then automatically get a free place on an Enneagram mini summit happening on the 12th of March, where we have Caroline Mace. We have my wife Holly, we have Russ Hudson, Deborah Egerton, we've got Liz Troubridge, the producer of Downton Abbey, she's coming, and my daughter Beau as well, did I mention Beau? So we will, and Russ Hudson, who is the stellar, mega, wonderful Enneagram teacher that has really been one of my most profound teachers as well. So that's a summit, that's free. That's a nice way to do it. So I would say send people absolutely to Hay House, pre-ordering Becoming Yourself on Hay House, and that you get that whole summit for free. So that's exciting.
That sounds phenomenal. Yes, absolutely. So just go to Hay House, super easy to find. Just,
I think so. Yeah,
oh, yes.
you'll get it that way, and that way you get the summit, which is great.
Absolutely. And what's the date of the summit?
That is the 12th of March.
Perfect. Perfect. Yes. So just go to Hay House, Becoming Yourself, and all of this will be in the show notes. So, shall we move into
Please.
meditation? Okay, so if you would just connect again to the spirit, take a deep breath, breathe in love, perhaps stretch so you can open to receive evermore. And as you exhale, just truly let go, melt into this moment. Breathe in light, the light of the Holy Spirit. All like a beautiful waterfall of light through your crown chakra, spilling into every chakra, flowing through you, anchoring you deep into the earth, that we might be rooted as well as winged. open now to truly receiving spirit in every way, in a way that you might never have before, so that you just unhook your to-do list, thoughts, emotions, and just come into this pure, holy moment. It said, the eye with which I see God is the same eye with which God sees me. It's a quote directly from the book. And so just allow yourself to receive that truth. The eye with which I see God is the same eye with which God sees me. And so in this shared intention, this community, this connection, just affirm, I am remembering who I am. And in fact, I am the remembrance of God. And so therefore I turn my gaze around. Rather than looking for God, trying to earn love, do love, I am God looking out from my own shimmering eyes. And so I just release now that play of the ego, whether I am trying to achieve something, that pressing, that pressure, that stress to be more, to do more, to help more, to be more unique, to even try to connect. I am just letting all that go. I am blessing my expression of personality, of conditioning. I am with a bit of a twinkle in my eye and humor at all the ways I try to get what I already am. And so I just affirm, I fully accept all of myself, all of my mistakes, all the things I wish I hadn't done, all the things I thought I should have done. I am blessing my holy personality, for God has given it to me to explore this terrain for God. And I have done a good job of that. So I just forgive it all. I forgive all of my expression, and most of all, I forgive my forgetting that I am divine. For out beyond all types is the one type that I am, which is love, which is truth, which is this holy moment together, here gathered in the name of love. So just take a deep breath in and allow yourself to expand in this awareness. And this time, just receive the breath. You're not breathing you. God loves you through yourself. God loves itself through you so much that it keeps breathing you in and out of its heart. So just receive this next breath. And you offer it to God as you offer your life to God. Lord, I've lived so many lives. For me, this one, I live for you. Right within me, the truth of love. Amen. Thank you, Robert.
Wow. Thank you, Alicia. It's beautiful. All filled up. It was amazing.
Yes. Thank you so much for this time together. It's been such a joy. I think we should do a type. I think we should do a type. We sh I think we should do a part two. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much. This was just great. Absolutely. Thank you. Real, real joy.
Oh, always a joy, always a joy. And I just want to remind everyone, so go to Hay House and order Becoming Yourself by Dr. Robert Holden, and you'll be invited to the summit. Also take the quiz, Enneagram quiz, Hay House, easy to find. All of those will be in the notes. Again, lots of love and thanks to you, Robert. So much love and thanks to you, beloved listeners. And until we meet again, live your love. And I do want to invite you to the next show, which is with Dr. Irvin Laszlo, 2 times Nobel Peace Prize nominee and best-selling author. So looking forward to seeing you then. Robert, thank you and bless you. And goodbye for now, listeners. And I wanted to share about a beautiful opportunity to buy my new book, Your Angelic Ancestry. It's on pre-sale now. If you go to alishadoss.com/book, you get not only the book, which releases in July, but you get 3 chapters delivered to your inbox, advance notice. Nobody else sees those chapters except those who buy the book now. You get to join my VIP launch team. I will go live with you every month, answer all your questions about angels and your own angelic ancestry. And you get an invitation and a recording of a summit with spiritual influencers, just like you've seen on Live Your Love. All that just for buying one book. If you buy a few more, then you get lots more bonuses, a course, several $100 worth of bonuses. So that's alishadoss.com/book. I so look forward. This is 30 years of my heart and soul research, work with thousands of students and clients, and I very much look forward to sharing this journey with you. So that's again alishadoss.com/book. And until we meet again, live your love.